But I've known Stephen for a number of years, and through especially Downs.ca, the OL Daily, which he puts out a newsletter that has thousands and thousands of subscribers, that really has influenced a lot of people who are doing e-research, e-learning, and so on. And he's been incredibly influential in the e-learning field across the world. So he's globally known, and it's I'm very humbled to introduce Stephen Downs, and he's got a lot of great stuff to show you today. So thank you, Stephen.
Okay, well, thanks everyone, and people online, you should be hearing me okay. If not, just say something in the chat area. Your chat area is being viewed by an audience here in Richmond Hill, which I had never really heard of before I came here, so I'm kind of... Now it's good, says Christina. Excellent. And so some of the people in the room may be joining you, and anything you say in the chat area can be viewed by people in the room. As I said, let's start the session recording. So now we're recording the Illuminate session. I'm not going to press my luck and try for video. Illuminate does support video, and it supports it rather well, but I'd have to be standing right here the entire time because it would use the eyesight monitor. I don't have a video camera hooked up to this, so I don't want to do the entire presentation like this, so I won't. This is the second of two presentations today, and as I said in the first presentation, when you do presentations in a day, there's a good one and there's a bad one. This is the good one. It's a fairly sweeping and ambitious presentation. It's probably not the sort of presentation you'll see in any of the other sessions. I'm trying to go someplace a bit different. It's the first time I've tried this material, although I've tried bits and pieces of it, and it's something I've been thinking about for a long time. Basically, well, the title sort of speaks for itself, Speaking in Lolcats, What Literacy Means in the Digital Era. And no, that's not a typo. And the poor conference organizers trying to preserve that spelling through editing.
Thank you. I got corrected about six times. I saved it, though.
Got corrected about six times. Yeah. Nice cat. That is my cat, Bart, by the way. And yes, he is the intellectual that he looks. All right, so let's roll. Let's look at some lolcats, because you put lolcats in the title, you kind of have an obligation to put some lolcats in the presentation. So here's your classic lolcat. The monitor, I wish this monitor was bigger. I wish it was like room size bigger, but if you can't read that, you know, wait for it. Toes passing in 5, 4, 3. Now, how many of you are familiar with lolcats? Oh, wow, this is new. If you go to the website, I Can Have Cheeseburger, C-H-E-E-Z-E burger, and is the link there? Yeah, the link is there on the slides. All the slides will be available on my website this evening, downs.ca. Ican has cheeseburger.
I dropped it into Illuminate.
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much. And you'll see hundreds and hundreds of images like this. Now, what a lolcat is an image, usually but not necessarily, consisting of a cat with some kind of funny phrase. Now, the funniness varies, and your reaction to the funniness will vary. That's okay. You know, they don't have to be brilliant, although some of them are just a scream. I thought this one was pretty good. Now, the thing with lolcats is they're not just pictures of cats with some text, right? If you look at this one, you can't possibly read that, but it's love, right? And then nothing says, I love you, like a paw in the eye. But of course, this lolcat is hitting you on a few levels. Well, the paw in the eye is the obvious slapstick, but But you all recognize this form, right? With the black border and the picture and the inspirational slogan. That form has been parodied like crazy. I just love some of the parodies. And of course, that form is being used here in this particular lolcat. That's typical of a lolcat. It will pull some cultural association in on it. If you look at the previous one that we just looked at, right, you know, when I said, you know, wait for it, right, you can almost hear that wait for it in your mind, right? There's a cultural context there. There's this thing that you've heard and seen before is being applied to this funny picture. That's what gives it the humor. Here's another one. Garfield and John, the later years. Gee, the lighting is so awful. I wish we could kill. Is there a way of killing those front lights?
Not in this room. I'm going to go do that.
Okay. I'm sorry, yeah, you'll be missing.
We're looking for a pellet gun here.
Yeah, no, because it's just completely washing up. I thought it was so smart because the morning presentation is all white and then the afternoon presentation is all black and the two sides, the yin and the yang, see? And all of that was supposed to be like silently in the background. You'd feel that balance, but you wouldn't really notice why you felt that balance. Well, now I've given it all away. Anyhow, so there's Garfield and John, the later years. And, you know, it's an old man and his cat. And so the lolcat grabs things out of popular culture, but not necessarily popular culture, just culture. In this case, it's popular culture. It's Garfield and John, right? John, of course, is misspelled. Actually, so is Garfield. Again, it's kind of washed out. It's too bad. I wonder, can I give you a bigger picture? It's just these things are so funny. Yeah, you see, the problem is if I do this, I can't advance the slide. You
can advance
the slides. You'll advance the slides in the illuminate? All right, excellent. Thank you. There, it's still kind of washed out. Look, I triangular later. Anyhow, I mean, it's kind of funny because, first of all, it's a made-up word. And secondly, how often do you see cats in the shape of a triangle? But of course, you know, it's, there's a bit of fun there going on because triangulated, you know, you're supposed to see that association. Or maybe not. Maybe the person was like 10 and just didn't know it was about triangulated. The beauty of lolcats is you don't know. So you have to bring a lot of the humor to it. The spelling mistakes in lolcats are very interesting because lolcats are very badly spelled, typically, but in a predictable way. Oh, now I just... So, here we go. Oh no, this water is wet. Again, the spelling has a characteristic... It's a characteristic spelling, it's a characteristic syntax, it's kind of a mockery of text speak, it's kind of a mockery of leet speak. Text speak, of course, is the spelling people use when they're texting messages and SMS. Leet speak is kind of a gibbled way of spelling that hackers use to communicate to each other. Because, well, I don't know, it's not like nobody understands it. Everybody understands it. But, you know, maybe things like these numbers for letters, like threes instead of E's. And you get that from typing in your passwords oh so cleverly. You know, so like, you know, your password is Jason Alexander. Well, that's really easy. But then you put ampersands in for all the A's. So it's J ampersand S 0, anyhow. And that's how you remember your passwords. So, and of course, they like to mock stereotypes, and the stereotype is the cat in the water. There's another one, the very similar thing, you know, I'm in your tub mocking your stereotypes, is another phrasing for this sort of image. Don't you love these? Can you see how these would become addictive? They're just... They're just incredible. I can't get over them. And, you know, what really, really attracts me to the internet is that it is just chock full of stuff like this. Forget about the open educational resources. Forget about online learning. Forget about Twitter and social networking. The internet is full of stuff like this, and it's the stuff like this that just kills and makes the internet what it is. That's why I love it. And that's really what I'm talking about today. Of course, cats don't actually drink coffee. That's the joke, right? But of course, that's not really a cat. That's us on the horrible, horrible day we tried to drink decaf instead of caffeinated coffee, thinking it would be good for us. What were we thinking? Lolcats are a commentary on everyday life, and the important word there is they are a commentary. 14. See if he keeps counting. Yeah, I stop, he stops. I'll start talking. You know, like, yeah. It is pretty funny. Now, like I said, the internet's full of stuff like this. And the internet, new media, properly so called, this is the first thesis of this talk. New media constitutes a vocabulary. Or more accurately, perhaps. Hi, could you please stop counting dishes while I'm sorry? No problem. He actually was. Actually, I think he was checking to make sure they were all clean. She looks like a manager. Anyhow, that's the degree of service. I like the fact that somebody is checking to make sure all the plates are clean. Less enthused about where he was doing it. He'd go to where the plates are, right? Okay. New media constitutes a vocabulary, constitutes a language. And that when people create artifacts, they are quite literally speaking in lolcats. Or they might be speaking in Joan Harris cutout dolls. You know, it's the same form though, right? Commentary, popular culture, you know, it's not just lolcats that people are using to speak online using new media. Okay, you don't like that one. Maybe you've seen this one. This is a YouTube meme, and I've caught it sort of near the beginning there. It's a screenshot, not a real video. I didn't really think I could pull off a real video streaming in here and on Illuminate all at the same time. So I put a link to it if you're curious. But if you haven't seen it, how many of you have seen this? Oh man, you got to get more plugged in. You're not speaking the language. If you go back to the school, like on whenever you go back Monday, if you don't know this, you've missed probably the big cultural event online anyways. Anyhow, these are two U.S. Soccer players. And the one in the red is grabbing the hair of the one in the white. And as the screen goes, you'll see her pull her by the hair and drop her to the ground. And the video consists of her doing similar sorts of acts through the course of a soccer game. This video has gone viral. I'm sure you've heard the expression to go viral. It's got millions of hits. And the question here isn't what is in the video. What's in the video is what I've just described. And, you know, it's neither here nor there. It's just some nasty play on a soccer pitch. But people consider this worth posting, embedding in their blogs, sharing. And the question is, what are they saying? For they certainly are they not saying something? And I look at that and I say something like, this is people expressing a belief or a statement that this kind of behavior is unacceptable. That's my take on it. Of course, you know, again, different people, different messages, your mileage may vary. And you bring a lot to this yourself. How many of you have heard of XKCD?
Oh, more.
These are a scream, too. I love these. This one, there's no way you can read the writing, so I'll do it. So the guy's saying, I'm locked out and trying to get my roommate to let me in. First I tried her cell phone, but it's off. Then I tried IRC, but she's not online. IRC is an old-style chat system. I couldn't find anything to throw at her window, of course. So I SSH'd into the Mac Mini in the living room and got the speech synth to yell at her for me. But I think I left the volume way down, so I'm reading the OS X docs to learn how to set the volume via a command line. And then the other person says, ah, I take it the doorbell doesn't work. Well, you have to read it. It's a lot funnier when you read it. So, now, of course, it's funny, but the artist is using a cartoon in the grand tradition of cartoonists, right, to say something that's not actually being said in the cartoon. Gaping Void's another one. I'm less enthused with Gaping Void, probably because I'm less enthused with the overall message that several hundred of his cartoons have combined to produce. But again, a lot of people like it. The price of being a sheep is boredom, he writes. The price of being a wolf is loneliness. Choose one or the other with great care. I picked this one because this was the one that was kicking around when I was looking for a Gaping Void. So, but again, the same sort of question comes up. What do you suppose the artist is saying? And again, people share these things, and we ask, what do you suppose people are saying when they share these things?
Hi.
How many of you seen 9/11 tourist guy? See, you're missing the best part of the internet. If I have done nothing else for you guys today, I have pointed you to the existence of an entire internet that is not the internet that you know, but that is the real internet. Because the internet isn't Twitter and Flickr and Facebook and all. The real internet is all of this kind of silly stuff. Now, of course, this is just a picture of some tourist, we know not who, him. And of course, he's on top of the World Trade Center, and some wag has come along and photoshopped an airplane into it. And of course, you know, we have the picture, and then we have the backstory. This camera was found in the rubble, blah, 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 blah. And of course, it's completely made up, because the shadows are all wrong. And there's a whole site devoted to explaining why it's completely made up, because all the shadows are wrong. But anyhow, you have tourist guy. And then you have tourist guy in front of the Hindenburg. And if you follow that link down there, you'll find this tourist guy all over the place. The sinking of the Titanic, the eruption of Pompeii, the scene from Independence Day where they blow up the White House. I love that scene. Anyhow. And so on. And there's this whole kind of theme coming out here, right? But if you think about it, again, there's a language being used. People are saying something. There's a structure to these things. You know, if they preserve the guy exactly, there's a logic to the images behind. And in fact, it's a logic that people understand. It's not an accidental logic. People understand this logic enough so that in light of recent events, they can actually point out this logic to people who don't know. And what this says, yo, I'm going to let you finish, but Pearl Harbor was the greatest attack on America ever. Now, you see what's happening here, right? The logic is, of course, you have spectacular disasters, and tourist guy is a way now of saying, okay, this belongs to that category of events. And now, of course, now we're taking that and parodying that with the recent Kanye West interrupting, I forgot her name.
Taylor Swift.
Y'all know Taylor Swift, you know? It's interesting. You know, y'all know Taylor Swift. You don't know about the soccer player?
Do we know Taylor Swift, or do we know this event?
Well, you know this event.
The interruption.
Yeah. The best description I heard of it, it was like stomping on a kitten. This is analogy, metaphor. And I'm sure out there, there's a picture of Kanye West stomping on a kitten. Again, you see, you follow the logic through. I'm sure I could find it. Go ahead.
The whole site was dedicated actually to this right after, the day right after.
Oh, yeah.
Like a fatal blog example of Kanye West.
Kanye
West.
Yeah. And there were, in the language logs discussion area as well, he said, yo, I'm going to let you finish, right? Now, he means, I'm going to let you finish, but I'm going to let you finish. Who speaks like that? And, well, nobody. It's just kind of the way it came out. Anyhow. But, yeah, you're quite right. There was a whole site, and you've got Kanye West interrupting, yo, this is the best constitution in the world, etc. You know, it's again, there's a style, there's a structure, there's a meaning, there's an intent. And people understand this. The people who create these things understand this, to more or less a degree. Again, some of the people making these things, something's backing up. it just kills me. Never mind. It's funny more than anything because, you know, like if I was a professional speaker, like, this wouldn't distract me at all. But. All right, this first thesis is totally intended to be taken 100% literally. I am not expressing a metaphor. New media is a language. The artifacts, the lolcats, the images, the picture of a virus, are words. And this is not surprising, and this is not unusual, and this is not a concept that we can't wrap our head around, because we, those of us who grew up before lolcats, and therefore speak in different words, understand this. We grew up learning about, for example, body language. Body language is a language. There are different things that are said. We can understand body language, and if we get good at it, we can actually speak in body language, right? We can do it. Some of us do it better than others. Clothing, uniforms, flags, drapes, there's all kinds of ways we use non-linguistic artifacts in order to express ourselves. And these non-linguistic artifacts have the properties of a language, and grammar and syntax and all the rest of it. And we use them for the same purpose, to express ourselves. Now, the expressions are non-linguistic, right? We don't know, we can't convert that dress into a set of sentences. And it would be ridiculous for us to try. The best we can get is kind of a rough approximation. But we would certainly be wrong, or at the very least misleading, to say, oh, they mean nothing by their dress. Of course they do. Every person in this room means something by the way they're dressed. And you look at the different people and the different way they're dressed, and they're all saying different things. Now, I won't point people out, but you can all look around and it's all in Carnegie's How to Make Friends and Influence People, and there's the whole section on dress in there, and there's etc. And you say things with how you dress. And if you don't believe me, go watch What Not to Wear. How many of you watch What Not to Wear? That's it. Well, there's not on. Maybe it's just me. I don't follow any of the advice, but I watch it. Another type of language, and again, it's language that we're familiar with and language we use more or less well. It's the language of maps, diagrams, graphics, etc. And here, this kind of language is sort of hard to see again, but it's a fairly well-known graphic. It's the social network space expressed as a map. So you have the Gulf of YouTube, the plains of MySpace, the ocean of subculture, Blue Islands here. The big Wikipedia project, Blog Pegalo. New sea.
It's cold where Windows Live is, apparently.
It's cold where Windows Live is.
It's not doing it,
yeah. Where is Windows Live?
Right by,
oh, way up there, the ice and hard. Yeah, well, I can go there, and it's like, it's frozen. Here be anthropomorphic dragons. I love how, like, Orkut and LiveJournal and Facebook and Zanga, they all look like Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Cambodia. Anyhow, there's probably messages in there the author had no intent of making. But again, it's, you know, it's a language, it's a syntax, etc. The second thesis I would like to propose, because we've had some fun, and now I want to get obscure, because it's not one of my talks, it's not one of my good talks, if I'm not obscure a little bit. We can understand these languages within a logical semiotic framework. That's going to take a little bit of explaining. What I mean by that is we can understand the language of lolcats, the language of new media, with a framework that describes what we are saying, how we are saying it, how we come to know, how we come to believe things in these languages. So the second part, this second part of the presentation is intended to present fact. Now the same sort of thing, the same sort of framework that underlies our languages, and this is part of the second thesis, also underlies information theory. This diagram is a diagram of how light signals go through all this whole process and get to our visual cortex. It's a way of understanding sensory perception as a type of information theory. There's a whole literature devoted to that. I refer to Knowledge and the Flow of Information by Fred Dretske. But again, it's the same kind of thing. If we go to the previous slide, and we see this sender, sign, vehicle, immediate object, blah, 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 recipient, that flow of communication. We have that flow of information. The same sort of thing underlies inference and belief. Now, this picture, this was, I went to Australia in 2004, and I went there specifically in search of insights, and I got a few, which is really cool, because you'd hate to go all the way to Australia in search of insights and not get any. One of the ones I got is in a place called Kakadu. Kakadu is a park at the north end of Australia. It's near Darwin. And there are these cave paintings on it from the Aboriginals 10,000 years ago or whatever. And what's interesting about these cave paintings is they're very detailed. This is a fish, but if you look at it closely, the fish has been cut open, and these are fish guts. And you might be thinking, well, why do Aboriginals have pictures of fish guts on cave walls? And the answer, of course, is this is how they're communicating what they know about fish and what parts of the fish to eat and what you're going to find inside a fish if you cut it in half, etc. There's a whole set of information transmitted. Now, how do we know that? We study the symbol, we study the culture, we study the signs, and we make an inference. And this is the same process that they go through, the Aboriginals go through, in understanding their surroundings. This is the same process that empirical scientists go through when they study the world around us. Science can be thought of, inference can be thought of, as a language as well, a language in which the participants in the conversation are yourself and the world. And just as the world has signs and symbols and underlying meanings, so does, sorry, I have, I forgot how I started that sentence. Just as language has signs and underlying meanings and all of that, so does the world. And it's the same kind of thing, the same kind of flow that gets us from observations to theory to what we would call scientific fact. What I'm trying to say here is, as it says up there, science can be seen as language, learning as conversation, and knowledge as inference. These are all different ways of doing the same thing, and the medium in which we do this is the language of this new media, the language of log chats and other things, because obviously scientists do not do their inferring in log chats, although they could, and that would be interesting. What this means is we need to get beyond a fairly narrow language-based way of looking at not just communication, although certainly communication, but also this language-based way of looking at learning, this language-based way of looking at science, or thinking, or reasoning, etc. How many of you saw Leave Brittany Alone? Same, right? Again, it's more of this culture. And the thing is, you know, all he says is leave Brittany alone, leave Brittany alone, leave Brittany alone. It's very repetitive. But, of course, it's more than just that. There's so much more being said in that video than just the words. And then, of course, again, it's 25 million views, 25.5 million views. And the guy is just wailing. And the funny thing is, if I'm to judge by looking at the popular culture, it appears to have been successful. I think they are actually leaving Brittany alone now. Not as much as he would like. But so, what sort of conceptions? Well, the conceptions like messages have a sender and a receiver. Sometimes think of that as the teleological theory of communication. The idea that communications have to come from someone, have to be directed to someone. Sometimes there is no receiver or no intended receiver. Other, you know, if you will, folk linguistic theory or folk psychosemantic theory. Words get meaning from what they represent. To a large degree, when we look at this, we see this is just simply not the case. Truth is based on the real world. Again, this is one of these language-based things that we need to let go of. If you examine closely what truth is a property of a proposition. So the question of as to what truth is the question of what makes that proposition true. What makes that sentence true? But sentences do not need to refer to things that are in the real world and yet can still be true. I'll give you a classic example from Bertrand Russell. Brakeless trains are dangerous. What makes that sentence true? You all agree it's true, right? But what makes it true? Certainly not the fact that there are brakeless trains that are dangerous. Because, in fact, there are no brakeless trains. The reason for that is they're dangerous. We don't make them without brakes. So how do we know? And you can see how we have to go into a whole song and dance about what makes a statement like that a counterfactual true. Another conception that we need to throw away. Events have a cause, and these causes can be known. That's one of the most fundamental principles, I think, of common knowledge and common culture, but it's a principle that is deeply embedded in the linguistic origins of its original statement. And a reason why you can get a general statement like that is because language is artificially precise and artificially general. Science is based on forming and testing hypotheses. It's the old deductive nominological picture of science, which you probably learned in science class
I won't speculate how many years ago, but it's me, it's like, anyhow. Formulated by a guy called Carl Hempel and completely destroyed by people like Emir Lakatos and Larry Lawden and Thomas Kuhn and others by the 70s and 80s, by the time we were, some of us, getting out of science. These things and others, and there's a whole set of them, taken together, constitute a worldview, constitute a way of thinking about thinking and learning, and static, linear, coherent. The world, now they applauded. What time is it?
So 20 minutes.
Oh, okay.
You said something clever.
So somebody really shot or really missed the, you know. That's what I always worry about. What am I going to do if I don't, you know. I am way too easily distracted to be a speaker. So it's this picture of the world as though it were text-based language, the picture of the world as though it were a book, a library. When we look at this logical, semiotic picture, we see that we can see the world in many, many more ways. So here's the frame. With a little Charles Morris, Foundations for a Theory of Science, a little Derrida, and a little Lao Tzu. This is a bit arbitrary. It's an exercise in categorization, and like all exercises in categorization, it is therefore an exercise in fiction. But it's also a picture of knowledge that I think is a knowledge as conversation, as interactions in these languages. It's a bit more sophisticated, a way of looking at learning and discovery and inference and the rest than, say, Bloom's taxonomy or whatever. So these are the six major elements: syntax, semantics, and pragmatics. That comes from Charles Morris. Cognition, that comes from a whole host of people. Context, Derrida, and change from Lao Tzu with a little Marshall McLuhan. Each one of these gives us a whole set of questions that we can ask about new media. Take a look at the syntax, for example. Syntax, we grew up thinking of syntax as rules, but syntax is really about how we organize, how we construct, how we create our creations. Remember the lolcats, there are, you know, unspoken rules for their construction. Remember the reference to culture, the way of spelling your words. These are all aspects of syntax. There are different ways of expressing syntax. Rules, a grammar, or a logical syntax is just one way of doing it. But syntax can be expressed through archetypes. For those of you who like psychology, Carl Jung, there's all your archetypes there. But archetypes can be thought of more broadly. Archetypes can be thought of in terms of paradigms. Archetypes can be thought of in terms of, I'm looking for another word that means paradigms, but I don't need to say it, because I can't think of it. They can be platonic forms. They can be the ideal triangle. They can be the ideal circle. They can be the elements of Euclidean geometry, etc. The medievals got very hung up on this, looking for the archetypical color red, which must exist somewhere and can't simply exist on somebody's shirt or on a flag or whatever. So they were out there looking. Anyhow, medieval philosophy is very strange. There's a whole school of thought that looks at syntax in terms of operations. There's a whole school of mathematical logic called operationalism, where mathematics is thought of not as quantities and things like that, but rather things that we do, ways that we make things happen. Of course, these can be extended to motor skills. There's a diagram I didn't put into this slide, where there's a whole chart of different motor skills. And all these motor skills correspond to actions on your computer screen. So, you know, and they're characteristic things. You know, a Windows user expects when they go like that and click that the program will close. That's a motor skill and an expected outcome. That's a syntax. It's a syntax composed of an operation. Every application has a syntax. understanding that every application has a syntax helps us understand applications. And there's even a site out there, I saw it just a few days ago, that looks at, sizing bars in Adobe software. Now you all know sizing bars, right? Sizing bar is a little bar with a little arrow, and you click and hold on the arrow and you move up and down, and that makes things bigger and smaller, right? It's an operation, we all understand that, a little simple rule framework. You look at Adobe's, in a single Adobe application, I think it was Photoshop Elements they were referring to, there are no fewer than 6 different ways of presenting sizing bars. This is a total syntactic fail, right? Because if you want the same result in an application, you should have the same syntax, but they're all different. They look different, they have different information, they're shaped differently, etc. Those of you who are in tune will have noticed the way I express that, a total syntax fail. Look up in Google something called fail blog. Fail blog is a blog that looks at syntactic fails and labels them fail. It's a commercial enterprise, and so what they've done very cleverly is set up this blog and then create, I don't want to say a meme because it's too soft to be a meme, but to create this kind of language form where people point to something really stupid and say, fail. So this is a syntax fail. So every time somebody says, this is a syntax fail, it's actually an advertisement for a fail blog. Syntax at work. Isn't syntax wonderful? This is, predicting my conclusion, but this is new media literacy. Understanding that little kind of logic. Patterns, regularities, substitutivity, acorns. I've got a slide later on about acorns. Acorns are wonderful. And I'm almost certainly not going to get to it, but what an acorn is a substitution of a word. So you've put in the wrong word in place of the right word, but the wrong word kind of makes sense. It comes from using the word eggcorns instead of acorns. Well, eggcorn, it's kind of, eggcorn, it looks like corn and it's an egg for an oak tree, so okay, yeah, you get that. There's what's my favorite, on a different tact, T-A-C-T, right? Now, of course, the expression is on a different tact, T-A-C-K, and it's derived from sailing, and you maneuver against the wind by tacking. You tack back and forth. I learned to sail once. But people say tact as in tactic, and that kind of makes sense, right? But it's not the right expression. There's hundreds of them, and somebody out there has collected them and is still collecting them. Because on the real internet, people do stuff like that. Similarities, I won't go into it. Oh, tropes, there's a site out there. Television tropes, or television and movie tropes. I forget exactly what the phrasing is. I couldn't find it. I didn't look for it. I didn't have time. But there's a site that collects and categorizes every known television trope. And a trope is a characteristic plot or schema that drives a television show. And we all know the television tropes. I'm not going to try to think of one offhand, but classic. Somebody says something that isn't quite true to protect somebody's feelings. The lie magnifies. The person is finally caught in the contradiction. And the show ends with his humiliating confession and everybody hugging because everybody knew it was. So that's the plot of every single Three's Company show ever. Right? Or, they finally get a way to get off the island, but Gilligan does something stupid, and at the end of the show, they're stuck on the island. So, but there are tropes that are used over and over and over and over again. Similarities, analogies, metaphors. There are rules, mechanisms, syntax for creating these. And it's not just blank as a blank. What is it that creates a similarity? A similarity is the having of a set of properties in common. But not just any set of properties in common. They need to be properties that are relevant or salient. Having the right set of properties in common at the right time in such a way that these properties have an impact on the situation at hand. That's syntax, and that underlies similarity, and that's how we make metaphor work, and that's how a lot of these lolcats work. They work through similarity. Semantics is the second component of the frame. Semantics consists of theories of truth, meaning, purpose, goal. It's how we make sense out of things. This is the thing that everybody's keyed in on. So actually, I'm not even going to linger too long on it because everybody's all about sense making. It's really a very small part of it, but everybody's on about sense making. The sense, the reference of a term or of a proposition, the denotation of it, the connotation or the implication, the thing that you're supposed to think about through some sort of process of association, and as I said, there's a whole syntax for that. Or another way of looking at semantics is through what may be called interpretations. Probability theory, for example. You're all familiar with probability, right? The probability that the sun will go down today is what? One. Okay. Well, what did I mean when I said that? Right. What I didn't mean is the sun will go down, because I cannot refer to a future event because it hasn't happened yet, and therefore there is no reference for my reference. So I must have meant something, though. I didn't just utter empty words. Well, there are different interpretations of what I said. Carnap, Rudolf Carnap, for example, represents probability as expressing the number of instances in probability in the logical set of all possible worlds. No, he doesn't say worlds. All possible descriptions. The number that correspond with the description that I have. So basically, Carnap divides the world into all the logical possibilities. Your sentence is true in that many of them. That's probability. Carnap, or Hans Reichenbach, on the other hand, being more of a realist, realizes we cannot know what the entire set of possibilities is, and so he gives us an interpretation based on frequency. It's the old interpretation that we're pretty familiar with from inductive theory. It happened, it happened, it happened, it happened, it happened, it happened 100 times, therefore, yeah, it'll probably happen again. Frank Ramsey, the radical, says probability has utterly nothing to do with any of that. The probability that something is true is measured in terms of how much money you would bet on it. That's true. And if you think this is why I'm expressing it. I want to stretch you out of your frames. There are people out there in the world, mostly involved in money markets, who define truth in exactly that way. That's what they believe truth is. What people will wager, what people will bet, what people will spend. That is, you know, is the markets determine all truths. So there are different ways of looking at these things. So that's probability. Association, I talked about association, the logical structure. The semantical structure consists of the different ways of associating things through similarities, through contiguity, or being next to each other, through back propagation or feedback, or through Boltzmann mechanisms, association through harmony. These things are associated because the world is just more harmonious if they are associated. I'm glossing over something, obviously, that's a bit more complex. Decisions, decision theory, voting, consensus, emergence. All of these are ways of getting at not just truth, although there's certainly ways of getting at truth, but also meaning, also purpose and goals. Right? All of these ways of looking at the world, of coming up with ways of coming up with, I hate starting a sentence without knowing how it's going to end, because sometimes it never ends. But all of these are ways of coming up with meaning, truth, etc. in the world. And different languages, different statements in languages, different artifacts will express truth, meaning, etc. in different ways. And your task in understanding these is not to simply assume, well, you know, there's a literal way of understanding the meaning of this, but moving out beyond that and actually asking the question, does it depend on an interpretation, a way of looking at the world? Does it depend on belief, wagering, etc., etc.? Third frame. Now I'm probably running out of time. That's a five. Pragmatics. Use, actions, impact. Again, this is probably, and you know, when I'm writing these slides, I'm thinking, this is all stuff they know. This is all stuff you know. Right? Pragmatics. The use of words, when we think of language in particular, but in our context, the use of artifacts to do things. And you know, you can draw all kinds of things out. And J.L. Austin used to talk about speech acts, and John Searle has this taxonomy of acts that we can do with words, assertives, which is, you know, the plain, ordinary asserting of something, but not just that. Directives, commissives, expressive declarations, but also, in the context of new media, harmful acts. Harassment, bullying, spamming, flaming. You know, one of the things that I've had to do over the years is be in charge of various discussion boards. And in various discussion boards, as I know you know, people flame, people bully, people do all kinds of really nasty stuff. And as soon as you begin to lean on them, they especially if they're from south of the border, they go, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. But of course, what they're doing is imposing a semantical interpretation of language on you, that whatever they are doing with language, it must be to express a fact, a state of affairs about the world. But of course, that is not the case at all. There are all kinds of things you can do with language that have utterly nothing to do with expressing an opinion. If I yell fire in this room, I am not uttering, you know, I am of the opinion that there is a fire. That is not my intent. That is not the expected outcome. The expected outcome is everybody get out of the room now, something like that, right? It's an action, not a statement. An expression that is harassing, is bullying, is, and there's the whole thing, there's the whole set of things that people do in discussion lists fall under these, under this category of harmful acts. And I have interpreted, you know, large swaths of online online conversation in these discussion areas and in these blogs as not intentions of making a point, making an argument or whatever, but intentions of harming people, intentions of undermining them, making them feel uncertain. And if you think of language in that way, and if you think of the presentation of media in general in that way, that is also the case, is it not, in advertising. Advertising isn't intended to make a statement or even to convince you. Advertising is intended to commit an act, to do something, to make you do something, but not to reason your way to doing something. And it will make you do something by, well, and as the studies show, undermining your confidence, making you feel inadequate, all of that. These are not propositional uses of language, these are speech acts. There's more. We could be making points through interrogation, and of course Heidegger has a whole discussion of that. We could be expressing meaning through use. There's, again, a whole, and I have not nearly enough time to talk about that, a whole doctrine about defining words through the use of those words. But this is only the third of six. So there's a whole set of uses of language in order to reason, to infer, to explain. These are the scientific, the argumentative, the cognitive. And again, a lot of times when people think of critical thinking, they're thinking specifically of these kind of uses of language. There's four major categories, and I won't linger on them. They can all be looked up fairly easily. the plain ordinary description, the assertion that X, which may be a definite description, this is back to Russell again, or allegory, metaphor, etc. There's all kinds of ways of describing something. Or I can just point to it. Definition, to say X is a Y. And again, there's a whole list of different ways of defining things. To make an argument, X, therefore, Y. And there's a range of different kinds of arguments. And again, you don't need to note these down. These will all be available after the talk. And then finally, to explain, X because of Y. This is a very common sort of thing. And you look at these artifacts, and again, look at them as, you know, and you ask yourself, could I interpret this as an explanation? You realize, oh yeah, they are explaining something behind this. They're trying not simply to present or to describe, but they're offering an explanation of why this is the case. And we come back to Kanye stomping on a kitty. Anyhow. The next one, context. You can't read this, and I know you couldn't read this, and I put this in the slide anyways, because it's so compelling. This is occasion-based marketing. And what I'm trying to draw out here is people understand that different things say different things in different contexts or at different occasions. So we looked closely at your three different occasions, the instrumental, the savoring, and the inspirational. Now, they totally made these up, but that's okay. It'll still work, right? So instrumental, energy drink. Energy drink, Red Bull, right? They're drinking for a purpose. Savoring, coffee, and then mysteriously they put Starbucks. Okay, some people are like that. I'm more of a, actually my coffee drinking is more instrumental, which is why I go to Tim Hortons. And then inspirational, wine, the French vintner. But now, this logic of context gives us a whole set of tropes that will inform the content of the advertisement. Instrumental, price sensitivity, quick and easy, positive nutrition, and the love, right? Savoring, freshness, flavor, narrative. Interesting how narrative informs coffee. But if you look at Starbucks advertising, narrative is part of the coffee. Inspirational, small craft production, right? Who wants to savor wine from a wine factory, really? Although, if you ask me, best wine in a box. I know, that just offended the wine drinkers. Right? Who have knowledge and passion about their wine. Context permeates our logic and our language to an extent that most people are not, I think, aware of. Explanation, and that kind of Bassman Frassen summed it up beautifully. Explanations only make sense in the context of what could have happened instead. So, why did the flowers grow beside the house? Because it was warm. If it were cold, they would not have grown. Because Aunt May planted the bulbs. Because if she hadn't planted the bulbs, you have different explanations based on your expectation of what might have happened instead. This is the basis for so many jokes. It's not funny. I can't go into them now, but messing around with the explanatory context is a source of humor. This humor can be found in many of these artifacts. Vocabulary, alternatives, what is the meaning? The meaning of a word depends on what the alternative words could have been. What is the meaning of the word red depends on what other colors you think there are. If you think there are only two colors in the world, red and blue, the meaning of the word red is very broad. Change is the last one, and there's aspects of change, flow, historicity, McLuhan's four questions to ask about change, and progression. There's an analysis of games based on the structure of change in those games, etc. So
frames can be used to understand new media. The third thesis, fluency in those languages constitutes 21st century learning. Now we hear lots of descriptions of 21st century learning, typically as descriptions of content and skills. But my argument here, and I think I can make it stick, is that such descriptions are not adequate. Focusing on the tools, I love these two things. Focusing on the tools is like focusing on pens, pencils, and the printing press instead of the Magna Carta or the Gutenberg Bible. That's part one. Part two, though, focusing on content is like focusing on what the Magna Carta or the Gutenberg Bible said instead of what people did with it. We need to go beyond skills, beyond content. We go back to Papert, with whom many of you will be familiar, and the philosophy of constructionism. People constructing artifacts are creating media that they used to think. And how are they thinking with it? With those six frames that I just gave you. So the questions we need to ask, how do we converse? How do we manage these media? Who is in charge of these media? What vocabulary is being used? What kind of sense are we making? And etc. What kind of languages do we model? We come back to the CCK 09 course with which I started, and it's not about presenting content or even skills at all. It's about creating this space in which people will create artifacts as a conversation. And what we're about is encouraging growth in their literacy in this environment rather than the acquisition of specific knowledge or specific skills. So much to the point that we don't care, well, we do a little, but not much, what knowledge they get. We don't even care what tool they use. What we care about is that they participate in this conversation. We want them to use the language of lolcats to learn how to think. And if you're wondering what this says, it says astrophysics made simple. And then I have some examples which I won't be able to get into, but you can look at those and discuss those among yourselves or not, as you will, in the days, weeks, and months following this presentation. So that essentially is the presentation, speaking of lolcats, and I thank you for your patience and for staying in the room even though we were a little bit late. And I thank all of you. I assume you're still online for staying online. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stephen Downs. It's a pleasure. I think what I love about these kinds of sessions is that it sort of takes us to a different place to look at the world through all these different lenses, and you've certainly provided that opportunity for us today. And hopefully we'll take that back to our teaching learning environments and think differently. Thank you.